MoneyWeb now on the money.
This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. I'm chatting with Peter Armitage, CEO, founder of Anchor. Peter, appreciate the time. The weekend was the Omaha, it's sort of, I don't know what we call it, the rock fest of capitalism with Warren Buffett, Berkshire Hathaway. The big news was that he's retiring. He'll be gone by the end of the year. And it really does. I mean, we all knew at some point he would step down. Charlie Munger passed away 2 years ago. It is the end of an immense legacy.
Absolutely, Simon. I think he'll be 95 by the time he retires. You know, if you put that in context, most other CEOs retire at kind of max 65. So that's another 30 years or 50% of a working life. And I think there's an oft-quoted fact. He's made 90% of his money after he turned 50.
And that's just it. I mean, there's lots we learn from him. One of them is, and we all talk about it, it's nothing new, but I suppose he is the example of that compounding power. I mean, given enough time, we can all create vast amount.
Yeah, it's all very well to say he made 90% after the age of 50, but he's worth $170 billion today. Which means, you know, 45 years ago, he was worth $17 billion, which still would have put him probably in the top 100 people in the world. But absolutely, I mean, that simple rule of thumb, you know, 15% a year doubles your money in 5 years, 10% a year doubles your money in 7 years. And you just do that maths over a generation. Certainly in our business, we see wealthy people, you know, his parents put money away 50 years ago, and it's worth enormous sums today.
Part of Warren Buffett's, I don't know, part of his allure was that he wasn't flashy. He felt very old school type of investing. You didn't get the sense that he had Cray computers and AI behind him. It really was just the old fashioned. I mean, one of the comments he made in the weekend, he likes to start by reading the last 10 years of balance sheets, which is deeply old school.
Yeah, I think the temptation is, and I certainly think of my own career, you naturally want to invest in new things and new fads and venture capital and small businesses. But there's a lot to be said for size and critical mass and scale is a very powerful influence in business. And I think he appreciated that and wanted people to have proved themselves before he invested with them. And Apple is your best example. At one stage, Apple was 40% of Berkshire Hathaway, but he only invested in many, many years after it had been a success.
Is part of his success going to give challenges to Greg Abel, who's the heir apparent? I mean, what I mean by that is just the size. And Buffett's always said, I mean, they've got to really do big acquisitions. They're sitting on giant amounts of cash. They just are maybe too big.
Yeah, I mean, they're sitting with $350 billion of cash. So any business to move the needle is got to be pretty significant. And, you know, certainly all his wise sayings, and he's probably the most quoted investment person ever. But there's no doubt that his age and conservatism, you know, his conservatism grew a little bit with age, and he's been very hesitant to make big new investments other than Apple over the course of the last decade. And, you know, I think he'd made his money, and I think he said to an investors, you know, just be patient. I think he invested a lot in 2008, you know, less so in 2020. And I'm thinking of the big market declines, because that's when he tends to make his big cash. And I think he was probably anticipating another crash investing opportunity along the way and stayed in cash. But the markets, you know, in the last decade, when the markets declined, it's bounced back pretty sharply. And you had to move very quickly to make big investments. And also to make a really big investment takes a lot of time.
Yeah.
Especially if you're buying a business.
Yeah, and I'd actually forgotten about 2008. He did some really clever deals with options and all sorts, but as you say,
the banks,
he made an absolute packet in it. And is part of it, I mean, I think two parts to this question. One is around process and almost repeatability of that process, which is perhaps easier as well with permanent capital. I mean, he can sit with cash, which is truthfully a drag, because of permanent capital.
One of the great secrets of his business was he had an insurance business. I mean, the way to picture is you pay your short-term insurance, they keep the money.
Yeah.
And you might claim in 6 months and 12 months and 18 months, but there's a permanent pool of cash. And in the asset management world, if I run a fund and do very badly, people take their money away. His float from his insurance business was permanent capital. There was no pressure ever to invest, and not having to deal with the month-to-month returns coming through, I think it's much easier to make a return. Not to say that myself or anybody in, you know, the investment world could have achieved what he achieved. But if you've got the luxury of time or your own money and you can be more patient with it, I mean, often some of the greatest investments in the world don't do well for a year or 2 or 3 years. But fund managers have often sold and moved on because they're under performance pressure. They're having to report monthly to trustees or to clients in terms of how they're doing relative to benchmarks. And he's never had that pressure.
And is that perhaps one of the advantages of private clients? And often folks will say, oh, the smaller private client can go in the small cap space, and that's well and good. But our key advantage perhaps is that it's our capital, it's permanent. As long as we can stomach the underperformance or drawdown and be skilled enough, we can do well.
Yeah, I think the combination of that is sticking with quality.
Yeah.
The converse of that is, you know, you make a bad investment and you stick with it for 5 years because you're waiting for it to come right.
Yeah.
I think Buffett placed a big premium on growth and good quality businesses that continue growing. And, you know, happy to pay a fair price for those rather than pay a cheap price for a bad business. Mm. That was one of his other big lessons. Mm. So compounding works, but only if you're in a quality growing business.
Yeah, if you're in the dogs.
You, it's your enemy. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if you're with the dogs, you just, what it's, I forget who said it, but you just end up with fees. Fleas, rather.
Fees as well.
A last point, this is very much a round process. And I imagine this is something which you and your colleagues at Anchor sort of very much instilling. You don't want to be the one who wonders. It's about that process. It's around instilling a repeatability into that process, which is so hugely important.
Yeah, I think process is very important, and understanding how you're investing and what your principles are and saying no to things. And I think where Buffett did particularly well was saying no to things. He must have been presented with every opportunity in the world. Very selective in terms of the things that pass through the process and pass through the criteria. And no fads and nothing, a big point that he did as well, nothing that he couldn't understand. You know, if you couldn't explain something to him, the elevator pitch, you know, in a minute, and he didn't get it, he walked away. You know, for example, Bitcoin was way off his radar. He's never interested in doing something he couldn't understand and something about a yield.
Yeah, absolutely. And he totally skipped the .com, which at the time seemed crazy, but in hindsight worked. We'll leave it there. Peter Armitage, CEO Anchor, always appreciate the insights.
This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions.